Yogi Maya, Reel 7. You were saying you insisted that the club should be open.
Yeah.
And you came across problems.
And it took quite some time to convince the committee that since the Lennon Wonder Fury, we agreed. And we owned the club, and that is all now in the book, The Boys. But my role was to see how far I can bring other youngsters in. And at that time I was teaching already at the Hasmonean Grammar School shortly afterwards. And some of these boys from there, and if you are a sports teacher, you always get a following. They followed me, and you see, can't help it. And the Huttons can be also play football and so on. So they joined the Primrose Club. And then some girls came. And even now, Martin Gilbert and Ben Hefcott had an argument with me that the book, The Boys, is one-sided because there is also a story of girls. And that the girls' story ought to have been clearer. Why were there so few girls? And was this fate of those girls different? For example, were there girls who had been raped, who would never talk about it? What was their experience as women, as girls, in that? Then comes in the relationship to the boys. There were only few. And girls were badly needed. So girls came in, and we ran dances on Sunday, and because the dances were good, more and more girls flocked in and came in. And for the boys to play football in the afternoon, we had four teams, to take their girlfriend back to the club for Miss Mara's beautiful Viennese cakes and so on. That they could entertain a girl, what they called the English girl, right? Or to go out with an English girl. And one of the leading boys, they are men now, I remember when he passed my house, and I didn't go far from the club, and with him was a girl, and she was non-Jewish, and he didn't know how, he said he was a traitor. And then I talked to him, and he's married to her, the children, and she became a Jewess, and a charming woman, and so on. But sometimes I reminded him. And even today, I call them with the names I knew them. His nickname was Babu. And Ben Helfgott was Benjek. And the other one was Motek. All the Polish names, and so on. And how they were. The Austrian, the Lithuanians looked down as the Polish. There was a kind of social difference between the Polacks and the Litvaks. Enormously interesting. And how they still had their groupings. And how they had to work sometimes with the group and the setting in the group. What we call social group work. You could only penetrate to one person through the position he had or she had in the group. And that was enormously interesting. And when it came to it, they said, look, anyone near that house, I flinched and said, let's not talk about it now. We talk about Dr. Friedman. Let's see. What about your things? I remember Roman Halter, when he showed me his designs for the gates, the Raja Shem. I said, Roman, one day, when I see from you something which has not anything to do with your past, then I know you have arrived as an artist. Then later he showed me a design for a beautiful window with all flowers and children. Then I knew he had that step back from being the Holocaust artist, to an artist in his own standing. And today he does those beautiful glass windows, and there are just lights and flowers and other things.
Yes, did you feel that was right, not to encourage them to talk about their experience?
With me. But they did amongst themselves, no. And they went to treatment, and I know some of them, I said it in the book, hated it like going to the dentist. They just did not want to be asked, how was it when you kissed your mother goodbye, or so on. Things like that, they wanted left behind, not that they were not ready for them. There is a time when people, when they come out of prison, wherever they come through, they're looking back, is cutting down the progress to get over and away from it. And my job was to, when they played football, then on the afterwards went first time over and they're beating up the opposing team of non-Jewish boys. There was a fight. They said, how can you do that? You let me down. You don't do that in England. They said, oh, we can't take it. We can't lose anymore. And so I said, then I had to come out of this. It didn't happen again. And I had to referee my own team. When I saw two of the boys losing their temper, I sent them off and said to cool down, and I allowed them to come back. And I was called up to the Football Association and severely reprimanded that I could not change the rules of football. You are off when you stay off, or you are on when you stay off, but one or the other. And if I didn't feel they should be out for the whole time, then I should warn them but not take them off. We discussed today in sports circles still whether, like in ice hockey, you shouldn't send people in the synagogue to cool down and bring them back again. But I was feeling quite rightly reprimanded because I put in my own hand of change. For those boys, it was a thing to do, circumstance, but how could I explain it? And that they treated with their age, isn't it? They were cheating from the moment they were rescued. When they were asked, are you under 16? Yes, I am under 16. They didn't know much English, under 16. They were 17 already. And then the FA said to me, can you sign that this team is under 16, this team is under 18? I signed it. And I signed, have you seen their birth certificate and checked them? And I said, no. And I was called, why? And I said, look, your boys have been playing football on England's green pastures for years. What have those boys meant if they play their football? So does it really matter whether they're months older or not? I must believe what they tell me. They have no papers. So I must believe what they told the committee. And I can't say they lied to the committee. Because legally, if they were over a certain age, they shouldn't have been admitted to England. So I can't undo all this. So I played boys who probably were too old. And then they tell me now they have the 65th birthday. And I said, just a moment. How old were you when you played in the under 16s? They said, 18. Now, they confess to their real age, and suddenly, how many of them have suddenly been 1 or 2 years older, because now it doesn't matter anymore. But what I'm very, Ben Helford is very much against, and in this Holocaust Center now, all right, they are ready to think back. But when it can be enormous flight out of reality by going back to the Holocaust Center and to talk to people, a psychologist, about all those what they call traumas. You can artificially insert that all again by giving them the opportunity. It's like anybody who sees a psychologist attendance. There's nothing wrong with him. Ah, must be something not going wrong. And at the end, there's so much wrong with him, poor chap, he can't get loose, like in America, we often can't get rid of his, going to his psychologist. It's to him like you would do a haircut. And that is when Ben Helf got quite right, he said there's a danger of the Holocaust centers and also of the becoming to isolate themselves. They always had the boys. And that is an enormous danger. Because the strongest one don't need it. And the other one should be, there's very little value in going back on this and going back on thinking over this and that and that and that and saying, oh, if I would only have been in that little village in the Carpathian and mountains by now, I would do this or that and that and that. And it was so nice and cool. And all this is, and then saying you must have a second generation in it. Second generation should know that they don't need an affiliation because of their parents' past. So I'm very often isolated with them, and people don't like me saying so, but I can't get out of my skin. That is me. And then we made this film, Antwort of Auschwitz. A chap from Germany came, Ginzel, who is Jewish, who survived the war because his parents were hiding in the mountains in a hay store, up in a shed, and they were fed by the local people. And when they were able to come down, they settled in Germany, they didn't want to leave, they had a child. And this boy grew up in Germany, he went off to Israel, he wanted an artist, but then he found that he had a gift of brilliant speaker and writing. And so his main thing in life is now to make films about the Jewish problem. And as he looks a very good looking young man, and also I speak to him a lovely, slightly Köln coloring of his language. And he's a brilliant speaker. He had got the gift to talk. And he made an, I want to make a film, Antwort of Auschwitz. Before we had one made which called Als die Synagoge brannten. We're all living in a library. And Antwort of Auschwitz, he came here and I said, look here, that is my, I will help you. I have a little to say, there's a little scene of my wife and me in it. But so we had some of the leading people like Helfgott and Montreal and so on, and Halter. And all of them, without me saying it, they came to the same, talking about the future, that they had no hatred, that they might have a hatred against an individual person, but they have no collective hatred and so on. And this comes right through. And the Antwort of Auschwitz is like the beautiful sentence at the end of the book. If you are amongst inhuman beings, you must be human. And if we would lower ourselves to want revenge, then we would be like those people were. This comes out of this beautiful through this, that thing is shown again and again in Germany, but it's in German, you see, and so it can't be used here. And there's a similar film, Als die Synagoge brannten, which I take a part in it, walking down the street and telling the story and being in the underground and all this. There is another thing which also deals with it, and he does a lot, and sometimes he has asked me to do some lectures for him. But the beauty of the book is, but it hits, is that this is not a book which ends with severe triumph over a certain situation. And that Martin has brought out beautifully. And he really controlled himself in evaluation and so on, let the people talk. Many of them are terribly upset and said, I won't, especially when I get sent it to him. I said, yes, I know. The Baba is not in the book. I said, because the same story has been told 10 times. And how you arrived, the day you arrived in a camp, or the day you went on a march, you all write, it's nearly identical, because you talked amongst each other. So you talk the identical, you tell the same story. and he had to take this story and that story without repeating it. And so you are unhappy that your story is not in the book. Does it matter who tells the story? It's you. The book is your story, but it's your own story. It doesn't matter. When I talked about the Primrose Club and so on, Martin selected what he thought was a talk said much more. But it doesn't matter. That is what he wanted to have, which is in the book.
It seemed from the book, and from what I've heard from the boys themselves, they were pretty outstanding. They've achieved so much, haven't they? There are some very outstanding...
I know Halter, who is working to make many for the government to do glass windows. And then Helfgatter is, after all, the representative of Holocaust survivors in a way, but he is more than that. And then about Boston University, two or three lecturers in the clubhouse was at the LSE as a lecturer, Hirschberg was at Berkman College as a lecturer. There's one of them, they always are very cross about him, Frischmann, he played football with them. And then he was exceptionally successful as a surveyor. He got an OBE, but he never mixes with them, and you mustn't mention him. Now he wanted to escape out of all this dynamic, and he said, I don't want anything to do with my past. And that is, I got friends, if you talk with that, I don't want to talk about my life before I arrived in this country. And they just put a curtain up, and you can't do anything at all about it. And he said, I want to get away from it. I don't want to see so-and-so be the member of all this, or reminded of this. And he, very successful, because he got an OBE, kids say, oh, talk about him very, not very nicely, but I all right, it is something you wanted to escape, in a way, in his own way.
How did the girls do? You know, you mentioned earlier on there were far fewer girls who came with the group. Why was that? Why were there fewer girls, do you think?
Because they got killed. The boys survived because of their laborers. The girls also didn't survive the marches and all that, just physically. The chance for a woman to survive the camp was much smaller than for men. So there was only 30 girls or so they could find.
How did they adapt compared with the boys, do you think?
Very much quicker. Women have a much greater ability to adapt. Also, language. The boys have a much harder accent, like I have, than the girls. My wife's accent is far less than my accent. Women have a much greater gift to adapt themselves and for understanding. Boys are much harder in that respect. And also, some people have Mahler, for example, then have her sister, married an English Jewish architect, and took it as a housewife a degree, what is teaching now. So there are success stories if you follow up. And some of them got very well because they got compensation, not much, and they invested that compensation in property and so on, built up. Who are quite comfortably off. There is none of the boys in need. Because if he's in need, they look after him.
Would
if somebody is ill, he will be visited within a week by them.
Would this be the 45 Aid Society?
Yeah. No, I left them when I thought they were old enough to stand on their own feet. And I said, if they don't, I'm not able now to walk on their own, then I have failed. But I have done my job. They are too old now. They must go out in the world. And some had left already. But some had to be put in a situation where they had to leave. And so there was a time club in Fishery Road, and for a year or so it lingered on them. And then for a long time, everybody was busy with himself. Of course, they were in touch with each other. Then many years later, when Helfgott came to me and said, look, we would like to form a society. I said, all right, come to Grady and meet me there. We can have a room and you can discuss it. And then the 45 Society was formed. And their principle was, so much was done for us that it's time for us now to look after ourselves and do things for others. And then they started. And when anybody said, we need something, they would raise the money, quietly, individually, or collectively. And Ben Helfgott is upset about it, that this Holocaust Center is financed by Jewish Care. He said, if we need any help, we finance it. We had our share. People have helped us. We don't want any more. The money should go somewhere else. And therefore, he doesn't want the Holocaust Center from the beginning. But others say, yes, we would like to, because we can meet our friends and so on and so on. We have a club. And there's a big gap in it. We had another general meeting which I never had attended, but there was a group who demanded a much more aggressive attitude towards the money which is in Switzerland and so on. And Ben Helfgott was brilliant in saying what he has done as their representative, and how he felt that they had all, that they were all in the safety. And if there's money, why not sending it to Bosnia or somewhere else? And my contribution was that, of course, the Daily Mirror would say all that money is from gold keys from people who were killed. It's very, very little. Most of the money comes from, actually, from all the money German Jews and Austrian Jews had to hand over before they emigrated and all that. And it's not old gold money, it's a lot of money which people have put in Swiss banks, the same as a lot of people in England have money in banks in Switzerland and so on, to avoid taxes and so on. So let's be honest about that.
How helpful do you think, or how supportive, was the Jewish community towards people like the boys? I mean, that would have been your main experience, wouldn't it? Did you find
pity, but some of them unable to cope with that type of person. But I was able to get excellent helpers, for example, Richard Barnett, who was the deputy curator, I think, of the British Museum. And I was lucky to get quite a number of volunteer helpers whom I asked to come. And also we had some very good paid instructors, which I got through the GLC at that time, for table tennis, for ballroom dancing, for drama and so on, for sports. And that was very helpful. And the club was recognized we had a Hampstead Youth Council, and one of the boys became the chairman of that and so on. So I think sometimes maybe there was a bit of pity, but sometimes there was also a attraction of something very strange which I hadn't seen before. Sometimes self-indulgence, look what good boy I am to work with those kids. It all comes in, isn't it?
Were they, it was interesting when you were talking about the English girls who were...
The English girls found them terribly interesting.
I wonder about the parents. Did you ever find any prejudice?
In the book somebody says he was invited with the parents and all. And the parents had a certain attitude and it was very difficult and only slowly they accepted him. Especially the parents who came originally from Germany, who only wanted to become part of, to be British. Right? And were very proud that their children had no accent. And then the boy comes and brings, the girl brings one of those boys and can't speak English properly. And the whole process is returned to the beginning. So there was a resistance, understandable, but the boys experienced that. And then the conflict, if it was a non-Jewish girl, can I take her to the club? And they often thought I would have not noticed or so on. Of course I noticed, but I didn't say anything. And they often, that girl couldn't find, first being attracted, but then along, couldn't feel really at home and safe there, and slowly disappeared again. Those with a Jewish background, they had something in common.
Was religion a factor in the club? You know, did that play a part at all?
Yes, I thought my thoughts. I just wanted to say them. It's amazing how many lost their belief. They had one boy who was an Orthodox person, so Orthodox that he couldn't fit into after the group, he couldn't shake hands with girls or anything of that kind, and they found him odd. And the other one was somebody who recovered his belief, like Hugo Green. But Hugo Green has this enormous humanity, which makes him the outstanding person. Probably Judaism in England has produced for quite a long time. He was a very great communicator. But interesting again, when Hugo went to America for training for a time, and then to India and came back, he had acquired an American accent, but as a cover accent for his Czech accent. Right? And over the years, that was less, less, but understandable. But we had no services in the club. They went to others. I didn't want to. I left it to them to find their Jewish community they want to join in. But generally speaking, religion was something very private for them, and they had to come to terms with it. And I had the feeling quite a large number of them lost their beliefs. But some of them are joined a Jewish community more or less for social reasons, not for religious reasons, and are very much involved. There's one very much involved in the Beirut synagogue in Belsas Park and so on. But for that reason, one is working in the very active in Jewish Christian relationship. They have become individuals. But when they are together, no brother and sister are so close as they are.
In
Yiddish, the German call it Lausbub, you know. Boy who behaves very badly and so on, but there is even you can understand it, you know, and yet it is called loss. And I very often say, when I talk to myself, you know, he always calls me loss. I said, you are. And they love it. I said, I love that you call me loss. And they have this, and they at that time they're not allowed to call me my first name. You see, you had to call me Mr. Mayor, the committee insisted very much that you are not too familiar with him, you see. Maybe also because of the girls or so on, see. So I was always Mr. Mayor. And now, of course, we have grown together, you see, so they call me my first name. And he said, Yuri, Mr. Mayor, it doesn't come down. And I said, no, you have to learn it. You are not equal. And it's important for your attitude towards me that you spot this, Mr. Mayor, and that I am on your level as a friend, or whatever you want me to. That is not quite easy, and it comes to the truth. But they're terribly attached. When I got my MBE, they sent me two beautiful Parker, golden Parker pens. Within a day, it arrived a gift.
It's interesting, you know, listening to your story, because really it started off with your youth work in Germany, didn't it? You know, during the Hitler years. And it seems... Do you feel that?
In my work about Jews, I give you the title, it goes up that when I was in the lower six, I had an exchange in the Jewish community with somebody who